let's get going on this. This is mostly. Oh, you even say so at the top, yeah. It's just you just got to get the shit done somehow. Yeah, of course. And and you know, if you just front load it, then you can just focus on telling the fucking story and it's fine, you know. Yeah. I'll just read the whole chapter as Doc. How about that? Chapter 8. Study sessions. You know? Yeah, or just from now on, Harry is Doc.
Well, I wouldn't use that word, but yes, probably. There aren't any Muggleborns in Slytherin at all. Not unless...
Okay.
Chapter 8. Study sessions. Study sessions. Harry stared slack-jawed at Hermione as Neville finished his tale.
No, okay. This is something we're actually going to need to... I have absolutely no idea whether to include these. This is the italicized recaps. Because I did them in the Hogsmeade chapter because I hadn't done the previous chapters. I think, like, okay, for example, the Hogsmeade chapter had a bunch of scene transitions to shit that you left off in the previous chapter into this one. But you also do say where it is. Like, you say where it is, and if you've just read the previous one, I think in an audiobook, especially when people have, like, the cues from the way people's voices sound, I don't think they're needed. And I don't think people will want to listen to the same prose twice. Okay, yeah, cool. Yeah. And there might be the occasional one that's good to include for whatever reason, you know, but yeah. In this case it's stuff they literally would have just heard. So yeah, I will cut that. Let's get to the chapter titled again so I don't lose it.
Chapter 8. Study sessions. Harry, Neville, and the other children laughed while Hermione blushed once more, but with a smile. Then they set to work. For the next 30 minutes, Hermione led a review of their Transfiguration homework. Everyone had been impressed when she'd accomplished the feat of transfiguring her matchstick into a needle on the first day, but when she explained her thought processes as they applied to McGonagall's methods, several of the others quickly made the same cognitive leap. Harry was able to transfigure a matchstick as well as Hermione after just a few minutes, while all the others, save Neville, made significant improvement. The boy was somewhat dejected by that, as Hermione was certain his wand movements were correct, but he was still unable to do more than... But he was still unable to do more than make the matchstick a little silvery in hue. Shaking off his frustration, Neville took over the session next, answering everyone's herbology questions with ease. Then came Harry, who apparently was the only one capable of deciphering Quirrell's awful stutter into coherent notes. Harry and Hermione jointly covered charms, and then, to Harry's surprise, Lavender Brown led the discussion on potions. Apparently, despite her flighty personality, she came from a long line of potions masters, and her family held the patents on several cosmetics-related potions, and also the valuable European concession on some Asian hair care product called Sleek Easy. Remembering Snape's final words that morning, Potter resolved to Potter resolved to ask her about it later. After two grueling hours, the group broke up, but everyone seemed interested in continuing to meet again on Tuesdays and Fridays for the foreseeable future. Harry, Neville, and Hermione stayed behind to chat after the others had left.
That went rather well, said Hermione. Do you think this group is the right size, or should we try to add anyone else? Or should we try to add anyone else?
We can go a little bigger if we have the right people, said Harry. Anthony Goldstein is good in astronomy. Apparently his dad is a Muggle astronomy teacher. There's a puff named Finch Fletchley who is fascinated with wizarding history and actually stays awake in Bin's classes. Personally, I'd like to add Susan Bones, but that's for political networking reasons, so don't think you have to let her in just to appease my evil Slytherin ways.
Neville rolled his eyes.
No Slytherins to add, then? And I guess I should ask, is it going to cause problems for you to study with us?
He shook his head.
I'm a presumptive of an important house. I'm in a wonderfully antagonistic relationship with the boy who lived, and I've been cultivating a reputation as an eccentric. And I've been cultivating a reputation as an eccentric loner. It shouldn't be a problem, but it's unlikely any other Slytherins will join us. At least not until we start trouncing them in classwork.
Hermione hesitated before asking,
Is it because a mudblood is leading the group?
Harry sighed.
Well, I wouldn't use that word, but yes, probably.
There aren't any Muggleborns in Slytherin at all. Not unless one of the half-bloods is running a spectacular bluff. There are two half-bloods in our year besides myself, Davis and Bulstrode, and a pureblood whose family never served you know who. But
I don't think any of them will risk alienating the older purebloods, many of whom are openly bigoted. And to be blunt about it, yes, Draco Malfoy and Pansy Parkinson.
Would probably call you a mudblood to your face if no teachers were around. Crabbe and Goyle are basically appendages to Malfoy and will follow his lead. And honestly, I still have no idea about Zabini. He just floats around like some kind of social ninja.
What's a ninja? Asked a perplexed Neville.
Harry started to answer and then paused, looking equally perplexed.
You know, it's funny, but I actually have no idea how to ex- You know... You know, it's funny, but I actually have no idea how to explain ninjas to someone who's never seen a Muggle movie, a television show. Let's just say a really mysterious, sneaky person and leave it at that.
And not? Asked Hermione.
I saw your exchange with him before you came over. When he looked at me, he didn't seem hateful, more like sad than anything else.
Theo's a special case. I'm still working on him.
He hesitated. I don't want to start any unfounded rumors, so I'd appreciate it if you'd keep
I'd appreciate it if you keep this to yourself. But I'm afraid that if it got back to Theo's father that he'd been hanging out with Muggleborns and blood traitors... Harry made air quotes around those words. He might face physical consequences. He might face physical consequences.
Oh, by the way, do you mind if I occasionally... I didn't this time, but if I think I have before. If I occasionally change where an ellipsis goes in a sentence, if my acting leads me in a different direction. I normally don't, but Oh, yeah, he did say he had to leave. I'm sure he's fine with it, and I haven't actually done that this cool. Yeah, he really has been very, very it's weird actually. Before I started doing Alexandra Quick, I don't remember whether I knew about Prince of Slytherin before I knew about AQ. I think I did though, because I remember considering doing POS first, and the reason I didn't, not the only reason. AQ was honestly a bit of a smaller bite to take, and I think it does have fewer characters, around 250 by the end of it, but like almost all of them are American, so like that was easier. But like one of the issues was that there are a lot of typos, especially early on in POS, and I hadn't really wrapped my head around the fact that, like, because I didn't want to go in and be like, well, I have to read the text exactly and have to read the typos. And I didn't realize that no author wants you to fucking do that. They want you to fix the shit. Like they're not going to want you to make their shit sound bad. TSM is just like, do it however, like, whatever actually makes grammatical sense. Inverarity wanted me to actually send him every typo that I found. The same goes for Strangers in Boston. I actually edit the Strangers in Boston manuscript as I record. If I find a mistake, I just fucking fix it. Well, because it's, you know, there's a sense that, like, the text is sacred, and it's not, you know, it is not my... I'm not going to say it's not my job. It sort of kind of is my job to make the audiobook sound good, but it's like it goes above my head to make changes to the text, or at least it would in certain situations. What is this? Well, I mean, I will once I get there. I haven't even started reading book four yet. If you want an earlier thing, I'm not sure if I've seen your name before in one of these, but there are two later chapters that I have already done. One of them is the Accio Wand chapter. I'm doing the whole fucking thing. One of them is the Accio Wand chapter of Hogsmeade, and the other one is the Department of Mysteries Chime of Calamity chapter. Which is funny. I posted that in fan content in the middle of a big huge discussion about canon or something, and it got completely swallowed up, and I don't think anybody listened to it. But yeah. I mean, I recorded that one for somewhat selfish reasons as well. I used it to audition for an SCP audio reading project. I don't know if I got it yet. I'm not sure if the auditions have finished yet for that. But yeah, they didn't actually give us any copy to read, so I read that. Yeah, who knows? I've put in, how many fucking auditions have I put in last couple? Like, I've been on Casting Call Club for like 4 months or so. Let me see. I'm curious about this while I'm being distracted. My profile. I've submitted 123 auditions since July. And I have gotten, how many roles have I actually gotten? Does it say? It's like 10 to 12, something like that. Most of those paid. I only do unpaid stuff for friends, but, and like some of those have been that, but. Yeah, this is gonna, I don't, okay, let me ask you guys this, because somebody mentioned YouTube. I stand in stark disbelief that anyone would prefer to listen to an audiobook on YouTube. Is that something that people want to do? Because if people want to do it, I'll put it on there, but it just never fucking occurred to me that anyone would want to. Like, don't you have to have YouTube Red so you can, like, listen to it on your phone with the app minimized for it to be worth any fucking thing? I can play it on the fucking TV, can't you? There must be, like, podcast players on, like, Roku and, like Xbox and shit. Well, no, yeah, but I mean, like, I listen to shit on my, like, on my phone most of the time. So if you have, oh, you're talking about that, okay. Well, yeah, I frequently need to use my phone while I'm doing that stuff. Like, most of the time when I'm listening, or a lot of the time when I'm listening to something, I might be drawing, which means I need my phone to, like, look up references and, like, check shit and stuff. And, like, you know, all that. Is that something I could change about the Spotify thing for AQ? I loathe Spotify with every fiber of my fucking being, but if it's something I can change. I'm doing the entire series chapter by chapter. That is the plan. Right now, I'm just going to I'm just recording right now. I edited the first chapter because I knew it would only take like a fucking hour and a half, which, I mean, that's a lot for one chapter, but, you know, I was like distracted. But right now I'm using it as voice exercises. I'm dragging my feet on getting a Patreon set up, for you guys to, you know, give me a few bucks for my time here. But like, it's not going to be paywalled like that. It'll never, like, one, it's not legal. Two, Sinister Man said I shouldn't, and I never wanted to anyway. Huh. Well, if I did that, I would probably just, like, rebrand my channel or something. And, because I would want to do it on, like, Sam Gabriel VO or whatever, right? But right now, my YouTube account is Saber and Blue. At this point, it's with my old screen name. But, I don't know. I'll have to think about that. I would need there to be, I'm not sure, because one thing about AQ is that eventually I'll have different chapter art for every single chapter of AQ, and I would love to make that like a static video thing, but that's going to take me the next like year and a half. I am losing the plot here. I'm currently recording an audiobook, and that is what I should actually be doing. I do appreciate everyone's thoughts, but I also do need to keep going. Well, as a podcast, like, it isn't like when I put it on like a podcast feed, it isn't just iTunes that can do it, and I make sure it goes on a Spotify. I make sure, because you have to specifically submit your podcast to iTunes and Spotify and Google Play as well, but I think that Google Play might be gone now or changed or something. I got like an email about it and I didn't really care. But I mean, you can generally access a podcast however you fucking want. You don't have to have a Mac to do that. Like any old podcast app you download will have, like, you can get AQ on it. And if there's one that you guys can't access AQ on, let me know and I'll do what I need to do to get it on there. But yeah. I would guess that one very, very big advantage of YouTube is that it is incredibly easy to link someone to a specific chapter of something on YouTube. Far more so than a specific episode of a podcast. Like, I mean, now, if you guys want to link people to any of the pause shit, like, I'll just share. I already have shared the directory that all of the finished episodes are going to go in and what the podcast feed will pull from. It's samgabrielvo.com/podcasts. Because the one for AQ was podcasts. But yeah, anyway, I need to just keep doing the audio fucking book. Fine, when this shit began, I'll just cut all of... No, I actually won't cut all of it, because there's stuff I say that I should probably refer back to. Oh, where the fuck was I? Okay, let's see. Neville shook his head while Hermione gasped. Surely not. I thought heirs of pure blood families were... I thought heirs of pure blood families were protected from things like that. Oh, that's Hermione speaking. Surely not. I thought heirs of pure blood families were protected from things like that. Presumptive heirs, Hermione, replied Neville. Not has an older brother at Durmstrang. That means Theo's not the heir presumptive, so he doesn't really have much protection from his father. I can sympathize. The boy. The boy hesitated and looked slightly pained. I've never told anyone this, but when I was younger, my great-uncle Algy sort of tried to kill me. Twice. Harry's eyes goggled at that, while Hermione looked concerned. You said at the welcoming feast that when you were 8, your uncle accidentally dropped you out of a window and you bounced, she said. Yeah, he said somewhat bitterly. And before that, there was that time... There was that time he accidentally knocked me off Blackpool Pier. I nearly drowned before he fished me out. Officially, they were both accidents. Unofficially, it was understood that he was trying to scare me into using accidental magic. I told that story at the feast because everyone was telling amusing tales about how they found out. They were magical. And I got nervous and told the only one I had. But I've always wondered about it because as it turns out, if I'd actually died, Uncle Algy would have gone from just being my regent to just being my regent until I turned 15 to inheriting the whole
inheriting the whole estate outright. Inheriting the whole estate outright. And no one considered prosecuting him for attempted murder? Asked Harry. What's to prosecute? It's basically legal to... What's to prosecute? It's basically legal to endanger... It's basically legal to deliberately endanger a child from a Wizengamot family. It's basically legal to deliberately endanger a child from a Wizengamot family if it's for purposes of provoking accidental magic, provided there's been no sign of it before and the child's at least 4 years old. He hesitated. Sometimes I wonder if that's why my magic is so weak. Sometimes I wonder if that's why my magic is so weak. My parents were both powerful wizards, but I almost never had accidental magic, and, well, I'm struggling in all my wand magic classes. I wonder if there was some trauma related to what he did to me that stunted my magical development. That's awful! Exclaimed Hermione, earning another hiss from Madame Pince. Do you mean to tell me I've entered a culture where it's acceptable to endanger children just to make them demonstrate magic? That's barbaric. Who's talking?
Neville, okay.
To be fair, there is a Wizarding Child Services Department in the Ministry that looks after the health and welfare of Muggle-born half-bloods and even pure-bloods of lesser families. It's just barred by law from questioning that... It's just barred by law from questioning the treatment of children who are from Wizengamot families, but who aren't established as heirs presumptive, which I wasn't until my magic saved me from that fall. From what I can tell, I was kind of an unusual case because most wizarding children show some sign of magic in early childhood. Anyway, our system of government depends on keeping as many Wizengamot seats filled as possible, especially ancient and noble seats. As far as the law is concerned, if I'd been a squib, it would have been better for me to have died young so that the... It would have been better for me to have died young so that the Longbottom seat could more quickly pass to an actual wizard. Honestly, you as a Muggle-born have a lot more legal protections than Theodore Knott. He could be kicked out onto the streets tomorrow or worse on his father's whim.
Ah, shit. Blech. There's a lot. This is a lot.
You can see now, Hermione, why I've been studying this stuff like mad, said Harry. By leaving me with the Dursleys and not looking after me, the Potters and the Headmaster violated several centuries-old laws.
He turned back to Neville.
And not to change the subject, but you seem rather well informed. You seem rather well informed about Theo's home life. I can make some educated guesses.
Neville looked around the library to make sure they were not being observed.
Last summer, Gran made me study files she'd had drawn up on all the children I'd be at Hogwarts with, whose parents were either known or suspected Death Eaters. She has a personal grudge against the Malfoys for what the Lestranges did. She has a personal grudge against the Malfoys for what this... Ah.
Hang on. I'm going to take a second here.
She has a personal grudge against the Malfoys for what the Lestranges... She has a personal grudge against the Malfoys for what the Lestranges did to my family. No. She... This is one of those sentences. She has a personal grudge against the Malfoys for what the Lestranges... She has a personal grudge against the Malfoys for what the... She has a personal grudge against the Malfoys for what the... She has a personal grudge against the Malfoys for what the...
Fuck me. Fuck my ass!
She has a personal grudge against the Malfoys for what the Lestranges did to my parents, but as far as specific crimes, Lucius Malfoy wasn't even that bad. He was accused of bribery, financially supporting a terrorist group, and misdemeanor muggle-baiting. If he took the dark mark of his own will rather than while being under the Imperius curse, then he probably murdered at least one muggle, but that's basically unprovable. He's an arrogant, bigoted snob, but compared to most suspected Death Eaters, he is relatively harmless. Neville leaned forward intently. Tiberius Knott, on the other hand, was accused of all that, plus murdering a dozen Muggleborns and Merlin knows how many Muggles. The killings usually were, well, extremely violent. Gran called him a psychopath and said he was probably the worst Death Eater not to get put in. Gran called him a psychopath and said he probably was the worst Death Eater to not get put in Azkaban. No. Gran called him a psychopath and said he was probably... Gran called him a psychopath and said he was probably the worst Death Eater not to get put into Azkaban. Why wasn't he if he was that bad? Hissed and astonished Hermione. You can thank Sirius Black. His trial transcripts are still sealed, but according to the information that was released to the press, he confessed to putting over 24 Wizengamot members under the Imperius for you-know-who, including Malfoy, Goyle, Crabbe, Parkinson, and Knott. That got all of them off the hook in spite of them carrying dark marks. Gran figures Black knew he was done for, so he took the blame for all the suspected Death Eaters who hadn't been caught red-handed. So he took the blame for all the suspected Death Eaters who hadn't been caught red-handed. "Is it possible to see those press accounts?" asked Harry. Hermione pointed across the room to an upper floor. "They've got bound copies of the Prophet. They've got bound copies of the Prophet going back decades, at least." Harry nodded. That would be something else to add to his studies, which already included his normal classwork, Wizengamot Law and Wizarding Genealogy. "You know, Neville, if you're really worried there's some kind of childhood trauma that might be limiting your magic, you should go see Madame Pomfrey. Perhaps it's something correctable. I've already talked to her about my size. The Dursleys weren't big on nutrition where I was concerned, and the nutrient potions she gave me are supposed to get me up to, Jim's height within a year or two. I'll think about it. Thanks. Okay, good. Now I got paragraph upon paragraph of just fucking prose, which honestly is going to be a relief. Here we go. Oh, ACI, come on. You don't need to feel bad about talking about your own audio stuff in here. This is, you know, like, fuck me, you know, if people have comments on my recording, that's fine. They're not, you know, you're not stopping them from saying anything. And it's like, Podfic is cool. And if people are wanting to, you know, if people hear me going and, like, are wanting to, like, listen to more stuff, like, okay, there's Alexandra Quick, but there's also, like,
other, like, you know, there's other content. Some of that content's yours, and that's totally fine. Oh, okay, I don't know what it means in terms of like the server. But like, it certainly doesn't fucking bother me at all. After some more discussion of school matters, the trio separated, with Hermione and Neville heading back to their dorm and Harry to the back issues of The Prophet, starting with the volume for 1981. The results were unenlightening. You know whose death was front page on November 1st of 1981. You know whose death was front page on November 1st of 1981, and 2 days later, the paper officially attributed his demise to Jim Potter, the boy who lived, even though there were no actual first-hand witnesses for his miraculous feat of deflecting the killing curse. Nevertheless, it was just accepted that Voldemort had tried to use the killing curse on Jim, and some strange backlash destroyed him, leaving Jim with the Dark Lord's mark on his brow. Harry idly wondered if the V-shaped scar might actually contain some fragment of Voldemort's evil, thereby explaining why the boy who lived should be such a monumental prat. Then he disregarded the idea. Voldemort might be evil, but Harry thought he'd be much smarter and less obnoxious than Jim. Harry was unsurprised to see that there had been no mention of his status or even his existence. The traitor Sirius Black was arrested on 3 November 1981 by James Potter himself. He was tried by a secret tribunal in accordance with what were referred to as the Death Eater Laws, a series of controversial temporary laws passed in 1980 to better allow the wizarding law enforcement and judicial systems to cope with what was effectively an armed insurrection by a substantial part of the nation's ruling class. Given the influence Voldemort had, Harry wondered why he didn't just have his followers pass laws to give him what he wanted rather than going on a mass killing spree. The Death Eater laws were most infamous for sanctioning the use of the The Death Eater laws were most infamous for sanctioning the use of the unforgivable curses by Aurors and Hit Wizards against Death Eaters, but they also had provisions for secret trials, as opposed to normal criminal trials in which a quorum of the Wizengamot serves as jury. The transcripts of these tribunals were sealed to the general public, and even the Aurors who stood guard over accused prisoners had to submit to memory charms after each trial so that they couldn't reveal the identities of any participants. Ostensibly, this was to prevent the names of witnesses and judges from being revealed publicly, and thus allowing Death Eaters to seek revenge. Apparently, before that law was enacted, several judges who had presided over successful Death Eater trials had later been murdered. The article on Sirius Black's trial merely said that the trial transcript had been magically certified by the court scribe, and that the trial had been presided over by 3 of the 12 anonymous Wizengamot members who were eligible to sit as judges in criminal proceedings, and who all had sworn magical oaths to fairly adjudicate such proceedings. Those three anonymous judges would decide Black's fate. The evidence against Sirius Black consisted of sworn affidavits from James and Lily Potter that he had been their secret keeper, a sworn statement from an unspeakable... Oh, that shit. A sworn... A sworn... A sworn...
A sworn statement from an unspeakable, whatever that was, Harry added the term to his long list of things to research, giving expert testimony that a Fidelius charm could only be penetrated if the Secret Keeper voluntarily revealed it, and a lengthy confession from Black, in which he proudly admitted to being a secret Death Eater, to betraying the Potters, and to placing a number of influential Wizengamot
figures under the Imperius curse. Nothing more except his sentence,
a lifetime in Azkaban for his repeated use of an unforgivable. Ironically, his betrayal of the Potters wasn't even a major part of his sentence, since no one actually died as a result of those actions. Having learned all he could about the fall of Voldemort, Harry returned to the book and went back to his genealogy research. After an hour of making notes, he prepared another letter to his solicitor and sent it off with Hedwig before heading off to dinner.
Bah. Getting there.
Checking something.
The following weekend, Harry discovered the most immediate and tangible benefit of his involvement with Hermione's study group. Harry had approached Lavender Brown with some embarrassment over the topic of wizarding hair care products, but she eagerly took him in hand and answered all of his questions. On Sunday afternoon, Lavender and Parvati performed a makeover. On Sunday afternoon, Lavender and Parvati performed a makeover on him in an unused classroom and introduced the young Slytherin to the wonders of Sleakeasy. When he entered the Great Hall on the following Monday morning, it was with the first perfect quaff of his entire life. Jim laughed at him, but Snape and Draco nodded approvingly. Greengrass and Davis were also quite impressed, and asked him to call them Daphne and Tracy, respectively. By the following Tuesday, Hermione's study group had indeed grown. Justin Finch-Fletchley and Susan Bones joined, as did Anthony Goldstein and Padma Patil, though she made a point of sitting as far away from her twin as possible. Harry wondered whether magical twins ran hot or cold, either practically sharing a brain like the Weasley twins. Either practically sharing a brain like the Weasley twins, or else at each other's throats like the Patils or the Potters. Harry remained the only Slytherin who wanted anything to do with the group, which was perhaps for the best, as the group split its time between studying course material and discussing the relative merits of Muggle, and wizarding.
Oh my God! Recording. Stop texting me. I'm recording.
The Muggle-born and Muggle-raised were learning loads about the Wizarding World, while the Purebloods were learning that a lot of their assumptions about Muggles were wildly incorrect. All of them All of them were greatly improving their magical skill, though Neville was becoming frustrated by his lack of progress in his wand work. The second session also answered a question that baffled Hermione since school had started. What was early education like for wizarding children? She realized quickly that there were no wizarding primary schools, yet all of her pureblood and pureblood and half-blood classmates seemed able to read and write several years above their age level compared to Muggles. Not compared to her, of course, but she was surprised at how effective magical homeschooling seemed to be. The answer, of course, was magic. Anthony Goldstein, a half-blood who'd lived abroad for several years, explains to the Muggle raised in the group about educational potions and how they worked. An educational potion was, as the name implied, a potion that instantly tutored the drinker in some field of study. The number and scope of those educational potions was rather limited, as they were difficult and expensive to produce. It was easiest to create potions that taught languages, and students who took ancient runes in third year would start off with a regimen of potions that would instantly give them fluency in Elder and Younger Futhark. Is that how you fucking say that? It has to be, yeah. With more obscure runic languages coming, with more obscure runic languages coming later. Anthony had taken a potion at the age of 7 that taught him German when his father had accepted a teaching position at the University of Hamburg. He said it tasted nasty and gave him a headache that lasted for a day, but when he woke up the next morning, he was completely fluent in German, albeit with a 19th century Prussian accent. Wizarding Child Services provided a few free educational potions to all British pureblood and half-blood. Wizarding Child Services provided a few free educational potions to all British pureblood and half-blood children, beginning at age 6, so that by the time they reached Hogwarts, those children could read, write, and perform basic arithmetic on a level comparable to a fairly smart Muggle child who had completed his first year of secondary school. Understandably, the Muggle-raised children were annoyed to learn that they'd spent 6 years attending Muggle primary school when the same benefits could be obtained in a few days with the appropriate potions. But Anthony explained that there were some sizable gaps in the potion's utility and availability. For example, there was a potion that covered basic arithmetic, but most wizards were... seemed completely unaware of higher Muggle maths like algebra and calculus, or, for that matter, entire maths-dependent fields like engineering and architecture. After all, who needs an engineer to design a building when you can transfigure raw materials as you like, and then magically reinforce it so no matter how structurally unsound it was, Arithmancy, a third-year elective, introduced elements of geometry and trigonometry, but only to the extent relevant to the magical implications of the maths involved. There were also potions for literacy that taught wizarding children to read and write at the level of an 8th grade Muggle secondary student, but the vocabulary and syntax hadn't been updated in over a century, which was why pureblood children who didn't socialize much had such oddly formal speech patterns. Any potions other than the ones for literacy and numeracy had to be purchased privately and at significant cost. There were lots of options for language potions, but only a few for natural sciences. The most popular one, designed for people who wanted to pursue studies... The most popular one, designed for people who wanted to pursue studies in alchemy, gave the drinker a complete understanding of the field of Muggle chemistry, as it was understood in 1893. The physics option was so out of date that it was actually counterproductive, leaving the unwary drinker to think that fires were caused by phlogiston. Is that how you say it? Phlogiston? Gotta be phlogiston. That's the only thing that doesn't sound stupid. Or like phlogist... Flevsha? Like, I've seen the word before. Okay. Leaving the unwary drinker to think that fires were caused by leaving the unwary drinker to think that fires were caused by burning phlogiston, and that vacuums were full... actually full of ether. There were few potions for wizarding history, and none at all for Muggle studies. Susan Bones, whose guardian was a high-ranking ministry official, did not know who the current British monarch was, and none of the purebloods had a clue how Parliament worked. Susan Bones, whose guardian was a high-ranking ministry official, did not know who the current British monarch was, and none of the purebloods had a clue how Parliament worked. Finally, it was apparently impossible to brew a potion that conferred practical knowledge of any facet of actual magic, even topics as seemingly mundane as herbology or care of magical creatures, which was why Hogwarts' existence was still necessary. The prevailing explanation for this gap was that Merlin did something and so we can't make potions that teach magic. Understandably, both Harry and Hermione found that explanation completely unsatisfactory. End of chapter 8.
Okay. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.